Joining us in this segment is our good friend, Sean Minton, here to liven our afternoon as he always does.
Friend, I never said you could say that. Whoa, back off, Doug. You're getting a little too friendly.
Our acquaintance.
There you go.
Listen, I hardly know the guy. Sean, of course, is our officially designated sports guy, having spent many years in the Pacific Northwest working in the media. Dealing with what? You did all baseball, football, everything.
Covered it all. I did the Mariners. I've done the Sonics, the Trailblazers, the Seahawks. You name it, I've covered it.
Well, all right.
Except women's professional wrestling, which I wanted to very stringently. They just wouldn't allow me to do that.
How about mud wrestling?
Done a little of that, but that was off hours.
Well, in the NFL playoffs, let's start with this interesting topic here. There's an unusual episode here that the 49ers, after erasing the second biggest deficit in playoff history, being behind 38 to, what, 14?
It's 14 or 16,
24
yeah.
points yeah. down. They go ahead. It looks to be one of the great comebacks in football history, but then it has this taint on it because the Giants get the ball, they drive downfield, and apparently don't get a call that should have gone against the Niners.
It's not the first time in NFL history that a call has been blown, and it won't be the last time. In fact, looking back just to last year, you remember when the Raiders were playing the Patriots in the
yes.
AFC Championship game. Tom Brady, you know, depending on which side of the ball you're on, he was either sacked and fumbled the ball, or he was going through to try to throw a forward pass. The official said he was trying to throw the pass. They get the ball back. They kick the field goal. They win the game. Two or three years ago, they had a situation when Tennessee was in the playoffs. Couple of seconds left. They get the ball kicked to them. There's an apparent forward pass on the kickoff that's not called. They go down and score. So this isn't the first time this has happened.
Right.
I think, as you mentioned, it's near and dear to the folks here locally because it is the Niners, and so it hits a little closer to home. But this is by no means the first time that a call has been blown. But it's one of the first times that the NFL has actually admitted
right.
very quickly
yeah.
after the call was blown that, hey, these guys made a mistake and we're going to make some changes based on the fact that there was a mistake made. Of the changes, most clearly what happened is a couple of officials saw what happened and uh-huh. would have made the correct call, but a couple of the other officials, including the head linesman, saw uh-huh. it another way. The officials never conferred with each other. The head linesman made the call, and you know, because he's the guy who pretty much runs the show, that's the way the call was made. This change that the NFL has made now, Paul Tagliabue, the commissioner of the NFL, has now said, look, towards the end of the game, when you've got a call like this, it's now mandatory for all four officials to get together in a group and discuss the play before the head linesman goes ahead and makes a call on the play. Because had they had the opportunity to actually get into a group and discuss this, the outcome may have been a little bit different.
How does that hierarchy work in terms of like who has more priority over the others in making these decisions out on the...
The only hierarchy is the head linesman is the guy that you see who turns on the microphone and says, you know, holding number 63. Uh-huh. Each lineman, umpire, linesman, depending on where they are in the field, has certain responsibilities. One watches for holding, some watch for, you know, pass interference. They've all got their roles during the course of a given game. I think the emotion took over on this play. You know, they're human, and right. I'm sure they got caught up in the comeback as well. I mean, I watched the game. It was a great game. Mm-hmm. You could see the momentum turning early in the third quarter when San Francisco scored early, and, you know, they just blew it. The thing that was funny to me is the guys on Fox that were commentating the game, they blew it too. Chris Collinsworth, whose mouth is bigger than the Grand Canyon, uh-huh. completely called it wrong. And he said what his argument was, well, the snapper, the guy who actually holds the ball for the kicker, uh-huh. should have spiked that ball because it was only third down once it was a bad snap, uh-huh. and they would have got another opportunity to kick the ball, which is a complete misnomer. The only time you can spike the ball and get another down is if you're the quarterback. Had he spiked that ball, then the ball would have been turned over, and San Francisco, you know, would have won the game anyway, and the Giants wouldn't have had an opportunity. But he kept saying it over and over and over. And Fox has guys, plus they have a direct communications with the NFL officials uh-huh. that he should have shut his mouth the first time and just zipped it up. But he kept talking about it. He later admitted that he made a mistake, and he got caught up in it as well.
So Collingsworth actually perhaps influenced the outcome.
No, I don't think he influenced the outcome, because when I say I mean a direct line to the officials up in the booth. I don't necessarily mean a direct line to the guys down on the field.
Right.
But he should, you know, this guy played in the NFL for 12, 13 years with the Cincinnati Bengals, and I think in his mind he thought he was correct. He got wrapped up in it too, but he was dead wrong, and he probably just should have shut up.
Now, you saw the game, and I didn't. I was watching it sort of on a computer screen as it would give updates, which was an interesting way to follow the progress of a game in the modern era. There was a claim, I guess, made by the 49er side of things that they shouldn't have had the ball anyway, because I guess a few plays before there was a controversial decision on whether there'd been an interception.
Yeah, yeah, and again, the replay shows it probably should have been. The other part... It should have been an interception.
So then, in other words, the Giants shouldn't have had that opportunity anyway.
Exactly.
So in other words, they sort of, in essence, balanced out.
Right, right. But there were a lot of things that happened at the end of that game. There were Terrell Owens had a couple penalties called against him. He got in it with one of the safeties for the Giants. Actually, it's the safety for the Giants. There was some offsetting penalties at the end of the game. Had this guy not retaliated against Terrell Owens, they would have had another 15 yards to move a little bit closer to kick that field goal. But generally what happens during offsetting penalties is the ball doesn't move one way or the other. They just keep it where it is, and there's a new play run over. What happened on the – just to quickly refresh people's minds, what happened that last play of the game is there was a bad snap. And I feel – Trey Junkett is the guy who was is the long snapper. And I knew this guy from when I covered the Seahawks in Seattle. Poor guy. He's 41 years old. He had one of the sweetest jobs in the NFL. He was literally paid a couple $100,000 a year to do two things. One, to snap the ball to the holder during a field goal, and to snap the ball to the punter during a punt. That's all he had to do.
Really?
He was a backup tight end, too. He was like a third-string tight end,
right.
So that if the first two went down. But that's his. Apparently, that's really hard to do. I mean, for you parents out there who have kids who want to play in the NFL, teach them to long snap, and they've got a position for life. And what happened is the Giants' long snapper got injured in practice the week before, so they called this guy. He'd been retired.
I didn't know this.
They called this guy and they said, "Hey, will you come out of retirement for 1 week? We need someone to do the snapping for us." And so he came out of retirement.
Perhaps a bit rusty.
Probably a bit rusty. This was the second time in the game, in the fourth quarter, as a matter of fact, that he had given him a bad snap. So of course he feels horrible, but that's his job. I mean, that's what they pay him to do. So I feel bad for that guy. But what happened on that play was. The guard who, at the beginning of the game, you can have a guard as an eligible receiver if you tell the officials prior to the play or prior to the game, number 65 is going to be an eligible receiver.
You'll be lining up on the end of the line, which
exactly.
makes you eligible.
Exactly.
Okay.
But again, you have to tell the officials.
Right.
And so the officials tell the other team. So it's not like a big secret, like you can make a big secret play. The ball that was thrown to the guard who was the eligible receiver
right.
on that play. He was tackled before he had a chance to catch the ball. I mean, but he was...
Was he? It looks to me like he was falling down as he was yanked.
He got molested, if I can use that word without anybody getting too mad. The other part of the problem was there was an ineligible receiver. A tackle had been running down the field as well, and he can't run down the field. He's got to stay at the line.
And that's what I'd heard. So there really was, even if they called him the wrong guy, there mm-hmm. was a legitimate call for the
but
other guy.
There were two calls that should have been made. One, pass interference on the defense. The other, ineligible receiver on the offense. Now, remember, those are offsetting penalties. You replay the down.
Right.
So technically, they should have had another opportunity to kick that field goal. And they did not, because the officials only called the ineligible receiver downfield. They did not call a pass interference. And that's where everything, you know, kind of took off.
Yeah, so it's weird. They shouldn't have called him for being downfield, but the other guy was that they missed, and
exactly.
then they missed the fact that he was molested.
They blew the call. They got one of the calls right, one of the calls wrong, and ultimately, you know, that cost the Giants the game. Now, back up for a second here. They were up by what, 26 points?
24.
I mean, even Jim Fossil,
right.
the head coach of the Giants, said we shouldn't have been in that position.
Right.
But fact of the matter is they were, and it turned out to be one of the great games in NFL playoff history.
Good game, but it's a shame about that little controversy at the end. But in the course of any sporting endeavor, they always talk about one play, but I mean, any football, baseball, whatever, basketball game, there's hundreds and hundreds of plays. It never really comes down to one, really.
Well, in this situation, it shouldn't have come down to one. But if you look at some of the great games in history, Michael Jordan with the last second shot against the Cleveland Cavaliers when he was with the Bulls to get them into the next round of the playoffs, and then they went on to win the NBA championship. It can. I mean, it literally can come down to one play. If it had been a close game all the way through and you've got two evenly matched teams neck and neck battling it out, that's one thing. But again, all that happened to the Giants is they got overconfident. And they choked. I mean, as soon as Terrell Owens had a touchdown early in the third quarter, a couple missed opportunities. And you have to look at the Giants' offense as well during the play calling from about midway through the third quarter, through the fourth quarter. You know, the coaches, their jobs are on the line, and they were just got very conservative. The things that were working for them, you know, they don't pass the ball anymore.
Right.
They hand off to the fullback, to the halfback. Everybody knows they're going to run the ball, so you stack eight guys at the line of scrimmage, and you're going to stop that. Mm-hmm. And if you can get them three and out, that doesn't burn that much time off the clock. So in terms of clock management, they could have done a much better job as well, and they didn't bother to do that either.
Well, the other pigskin season that's drawn to a close now is that of college football, something of an issue for UCD, as we've talked about, that's moving up to the big, wide, wonderful world of Division I in the future. And, you know, I think it's inane that they vote, that college coaches or sports writers vote on who the national champion is. But I guess this year, Ohio State got all the first place votes because they managed to go undefeated and win one of these cockamamie bowl games that's supposed to decide who the, quote, true national champion is, unquote.
One of the greatest games in the history of college football, and I missed it.
Oh.
Out on a dinner date, for Christ's sakes. I had to have my dad call me and tell me I missed a great game. But for folks who get frustrated with the BCS, which is the Bowl Championship Series, there's one more year left on the contract where, they've already done the Rose Bowl. They've already done the Fiesta Bowl. I think next year it's the Sugar Bowl for the national champ. After that, this contract that they have, they're either going to, you know, re-up it for X amount of years, or they're going to go out to a playoff system. And I think by the time all is said and done, we're in our fourth or fifth year of the BCS, I think they're going to go to a playoff system. And then in that situation, you're probably going to take the top eight teams in the country. Uh-huh. You're going to line them up in a playoff format, lose a route each week. You're going to come to a championship game. It may not be the number one and number two team in the nation. It could be the number one team against the number eight team. At that point, it's who's playing best down the stretch.
Right.
This year, had that happened, it probably would have been Miami and USC. USC was playing the best football of any team in the nation at the end of the year. They absolutely crushed Iowa in the Sugar Bowl. So, you know, they probably should have been there this year, and that would have been a good game. But it was a great game from what I hear.
Yeah, but yeah, I don't know. And with these colleges, with the lack of standardization such as you have in the NFL, I always thought it was utterly disgusting when guys like Barry Switzer at Oklahoma used to run up the score 63-7 against some team they're just beating up on to get the attention of the coaches.
That doesn't matter anymore. About 2 years ago, the BCS took that factor out in terms of how to rate teams, because you're absolutely right, Doug. There was a time when margin of victory meant something. So you get Miami playing the Sisters of the Poor, and they'd beat them 96-0, not necessarily to humiliate the team they were playing, but because at some point in the season that might play a factor in whether they're number one or number two and able to play for a national championship. And both of those teams that played in the Fiesta Bowl this year received $13 million. And that can do a lot for an athletic program. $13 million.
Wow. Well, as you said, UCD will be a long way away from being an issue for bowls, I think. Maybe a generation.
Oh, my God. I'm trying to think if there was anybody from the Big Sky. Boise State played in the Humanitarian Bowl, which, incidentally... incidentally enough, was played in Boise. They ended up winning that game. And I'm trying to think if any other Big Sky team made it in. I'd have to look back. But that's not a bowl game that's going to pay more than, I think that it's a bus ticket and maybe
a
meal.
Money loser.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Well, what happens if you win like the Pacific 10 and then you get caught up in this in this playoff system? Does someone else take your place at the Rose Bowl?
That's exactly what happened this year. My beloved Cougars made it to the Rose Bowl this year as co-champions of the Pac-10, but Ohio State, which as the Big Ten champ, would normally go to the Rose Bowl because they were in the national championship game. Uh-huh. What ended up happening is they had to take somebody else and put him in the Rose Bowl.
Oh.
So they picked Oklahoma, which was the champion out of the Big 12. By the way, they ended up rolling over Washington State. But the lowest attended Rose Bowl ever.
Wow.
86,000 people showed up in a place that holds over 100,000. Wow. So there was some money lost there.
I wasn't following that story very closely. The Big 12, they normally take the Big 10, so they just grab some other school and
right.
broke
they
the tradition
just,
of...
With the BCS yeah. bowl, if you're BCS eligible per se, then they can rotate you into any bowl they want from now on. This is the first time in, I believe, the history of the Rose Bowl that it wasn't a Pac-10 team against a Big Ten team. At least, in the last 25, 30 years, it's always been the champion of the Big
yeah.
Ten versus the champion of the Pac-10. And they've had some pretty good games there. But this year, Oklahoma, which... it doesn't even sound right to have Oklahoma in the Rose Bowl. But they were there and they spanked Washington State. But from what I understand, tickets that listed for $150, if you were down there, you could get them for $25 right before the game started.
Wow.
But Washington State got $13 million and you can buy a lot of talent with that. So I'm hoping that they can go out there and use that money properly and keeping some talent.
To buy more scholars for the university.
Hey, if you've ever been to Pullman, it takes more than just a trip on campus to get people to play there.
Well, Sean, talking a little football, which is not exactly, I guess it is public affairs broadcasting. People are interested in football, and by God, it's part of our lives.
I'm here to provide a service, Doug, and that's what I do.
Well, thank you again for coming, Sean. We'll see you hopefully soon.
Okay.